Good morning, everyone. I'm Ruth Henderson. I came from Texas A&M, as he said, and talked about the importance of destructive feeding in the development of the endoparasitoid toxineuron nigriceps. So just what I'm going to tell you about, a little bit about toxineuron nigriceps and what I was looking at and some of my hypotheses, how I went about it, and what I found, what I'm going to be doing in the future. So toxineuron nigriceps is Braconid hymenoptera. It was formerly called Cardiocolles nigriceps. You'll probably still hear people using that name quite a bit. It's a coenobiont endoparasitoid, so just basically it's developing inside of a host that is still alive and continuing with its own development. It's a specialist on the tobacco budworm, Heliothis virescens, which is a noctuid moth. It's a pest in cotton and tobacco. So his three larval instars. It's got a first instar, which is small with large, well-sclerotized mandibles for combat. It's a very active larva. The second is more grub-like, and the third is also grub-like. And the third instar is what emerges from the host, and then it actually will chew its way back into the host and consume the remaining tissues. It leaves pretty much only the cuticle and head capsule. So this is just a little bit of what that looks like. The larva comes out from the side of the host and reinserts its head, and then once it finishes, it's rather large and bloated, and all that's left of the host is just a shriveled cuticle. So as I said, they're much bigger after feeding than before, and also there's a bit of a color change. They start out, when they come out, they're green, the same color as the hemolymph of the host. Up to this point, they've just been hemolymph feeding, absorbing nutrients directly from that. But after feeding, they're kind of a pale yellow color. So it's been partially reared in vitro by a colleague at the lab, Indira Kuryachan. She reared it from early second instar to late third on a semi-solid medium. But none of the resulting third instar larvae were able to complete their development. They died as third instars. And one possible reason for that is because they didn't have this post-emergence feeding as they would naturally. So what we sometimes would see in the lab is a larva would emerge and then for one reason or another not feed on the host remains. And some of these still developed into adult wasps, but as you can see from this picture, they're quite a bit smaller. So some of the questions this raised is how does this destructive feeding affect the development of this parasitoid? Is it just a way to gain extra resources for increased egg mass or just longevity, or is it something that's absolutely necessary for development? Does what it's eating affect its development, or can it be fed alternate foods? So some of the things I hypothesized just based on my observations was that it is not necessary, because as I said, we would sometimes see adult emergence, but it's important in accumulation of resources. And if it's not necessary, then the developing parasitoids should be able to benefit from eating non-host tissues. So a little of what I did, my treatments, I had a control in which the parasitoid was simply allowed to do its normal emergence and feeding, and then was masked and placed in a gel capsule, which served as a pupation chamber. I did a non-feeding treatment, where as soon as the larvae came out of the host, it was removed from those host remains before it could feed. And then kind of my test treatments, I took the host remains, removed the larva from it, and then scraped the tissue out of the host to be fed back to the larva. You can see in this picture here about what it looked like. I put the tissue on a piece of filter paper, put the larva next to it, and left it in the incubator. For the first treatment, I left it for 2 hours. The second treatment was very similar, except it was allowed for 3 hours, and then the last treatment, I actually fed them tissue from late fifth instar Heliothis virescens, which had not been parasitized. Now, the reason I did this 3-hour limit, because at this time, once the tissue is removed from the host, it begins to melanize and dry out and is really not suitable for feeding anymore at that point. So the measurements I took, looking at how it affects the mass, I just took the mass after the feeding treatment, or in the three treatments in which I fed them scraped tissue, I took mass before and after feeding. I also measured cocoon mass and then adult dry mass of any adults that emerged. I also measured the cocoon formation, just how many larvae out of the treatment formed cocoons, and adult emergence. So what I found, so the larval mass after treatment, as you can see, the control is much higher than any of the scrape tissue feeding treatments, but the treatment in which they were fed scrape tissue from parasitized host for 3 hours was significantly heavier than those that had not been fed anything after emergence. The others were all quite similar. So if you look at just the change in mass from before and after feeding, as you can see, the greatest increase in mass was in that 3 hour parasitized tissue feeding. Very little mass gain in the unparasitized tissue, but they did feed on it to some degree. This is just how the mass changed before and after. A paired sample t-test showed that these were all significant changes in mass. However, it was apparently not enough to be different from the non-feeding treatment. Cocoon mass, again, the same pattern. Control is far larger than any of the others, but there was some difference in the 3 hour parasitized tissue feeding. But once we get to adult mass, you'll see that only the control is different from the others. Once they got to adulthood, all the masses from all the different feeding treatments were about the same. We look at cocoon formation. There was no significant effect of the feeding on cocoon formation. That most of them were able to form cocoons pretty well. A bit lower in the non-feeding treatment, but it was not significant. But when we look at adult emergence, as you can see, if they are denied any feeding after emergence, we get only less than half of them will make it to adulthood. Looking at these, a lot of them managed to form into adults, but they died in the cocoon. They were unable to emerge. Just a little bit about what I've concluded from this. So obviously the ones that were allowed to carry out just the normal feeding were quite larger at larval, pupal, and adult stages than all of the others. But by feeding them scraped tissues removed from the host, they were able to gain mass. So they were able to feed after emerging and having their normal behavior disrupted. But only larvae and cocoons from one of the treatments were significantly larger than the others. But so cocoon formation was not impacted by host feeding. So however much nutrients they have when they come out of the host, apparently that is enough for them to be able to produce silk and form a normal cocoon. However, survival to adulthood is affected by this feeding. Some of them can become adults without this tissue feeding, but it's a very low number. So some of the things I concluded, larvae will feed after being removed from their host remains. So this indicates that, even if we disrupt their normal pattern of behavior, we can still get them to eat something afterward. They're not just going to ignore food presented to them, and they will feed on non-host tissue, at least from their host that has not been parasitized. And as far as mass gain goes, the normal destructive feeding was the best, but this could be due to kind of the deterioration in quality of the tissue after it's been removed from the host body. So as you can see, some amount of tissue feeding, even just a little bit, like as in on the unparasitized tissue, is enough to dramatically increase the survival to adulthood. So some possible explanations for this. It could be there's some mass threshold that they need to make it all the way to adult wasps, or that there is some key nutrient within the host that they feed on after emerging. And although the survival is increased with these feeding treatments, the resulting adults are still quite a bit smaller than the normal adults, so this could obviously have impacts on their fecundity, the amount of eggs that they're able to lay, or in the case of males, sperm production. Some of the things I'm going to be looking at in the future, a different control with just the allowing the larvae to normally host feed, but only for 3 hours, just to kind of compensate for that time difference, and just feeding some various other things. So this study was funded in part by a grant from the Fred C. Glockner Foundation, and this is some of the select references.
After you removed the tissue from the cocoon, did you see deterioration of that tissue over the time for the experiment?
Up from the host tissue? Yes. So once the tissue was removed from the host remains or from the live host, it was it started to melanize and just sort of solidify.
But would that occur in the cocoon?
No. When the tissue is still within the host, I think it lasts for a good while the parasitoid is feeding on it.